This is the John Nuzzo Leadership Podcast.
Welcome to this month's podcast. I'd ask you to do something before we get started with the content. If the content that you're actually hearing is of value to you, would you do two simple things for me? One, would you leave a review? And then secondly, share this to people that you think it can help. I certainly would appreciate it because we're trying to expand our reach to help as many people as we can. We're in the middle of literally 6 months, month to month, of podcasts on the values that Michelle and I have lived our life by and have pastored and led by. And so I'm not going to reiterate the ones we've done in the past, but we've already talked about let love lead, start with people, expect multiplication. I'm going to go into the fourth one this month, and then the next 2 months, the final two. And just for those of you who have not listened to the other ones, please go back and do so. I believe if you'll listen to all of them, it will bring great value to you. But a couple plus years ago, our executive pastor, Matt Gate, came to me and asked me to actually, for Michelle and I, to help write out our values. He said, I know them, but our staff, our church, really has never heard them succinctly. So we spent a lot of time putting language together, not that would be value-driven, but are our values. So these are things that we have lived by our entire married life. And regardless of our vocation, this is what I would do regardless of my vocation. And so I want to take the time to share the values, because here's what I want to help you to see about the why of values. Perseverance comes from being value-driven, not outcome-driven. It's very easy in the world in which we live to be outcome-driven. If you want a recipe to be absolutely discouraged in life, be outcome-driven, because you can't control the circumstances. You can't control the timelines. You can't control a lot of things. In fact, I've learned control is an illusion. But what I can do is have a value that makes me immovable and will keep you steady in the midst of every difficulty. Values let you make decisions before it's difficult. So I want to encourage you. That's why we're taking the time in these 6 months of podcast to lay these values out and share them with you as effectively as I know how. Now, let me take you into value number four. Make it count. Make it count. And as with every value, there's a subtext written. And let me, again, read you. This is the value explaining make it count that we have chosen to live by for our entire lives. Here it's simply this. We consider every interaction with every individual a once-in-a-lifetime privilege. We seek to see everyone as God sees them and infuse our time together with kindness, hospitality, and excellence. Again, the fourth value, make it count. We consider every interaction with every individual a once-in-a-lifetime privilege. We seek to see, that's intentional, we seek to see everyone as God sees them and infuse our time together with three things, kindness, hospitality, and excellence. So the first thing I just want to mention as we talk about make it count is simply this. You have to seek to see the unseen. You know, I as a person, particularly when I was younger, until God really helped me, I was so intimidated by people that, quote, were successful. I felt like I didn't belong in their presence. In fact, I couldn't wait to get away from them. And the Holy Spirit began to deal with me back in those days. And he said, the minute you think someone is better than you, then by definition, you believe there are people lesser than you. There are no great people, son. Only a great God that loves broken people. No one is a great man or a great woman. There's only a great God. And all human beings, no matter whether they love me or hate me, hold intrinsic value to me. They are the very fruit of the earth for which I died. And that was life-changing to me. And so early on in our life, we made it a very, very intentional thing to seek to see what others would overlook. And that would largely, I'm talking about people. I wish I could tell you that that was a value that was my own, but it was Michelle. And as we married, she pulled me into that value and helped me understand where I was making a lot of assumptions. And she began to speak to me. And now here's what I love about values. When they're from God, you can adopt them and they can become a part of your soul. I'm so grateful for a wife that helped me learn to live in the value of make it count. As with every value, I try to share a story that amplifies it. About 31 years ago, when Michelle and I were traveling and speaking in churches, And I don't want to exaggerate that. The average church we spoke in probably had 75 to 150 people. And that's not to belittle it at all. We consider that, and still do, just an incredible privilege to have been able to minister in those places. But I don't want to give the indication that you were thinking I was doing conferences with thousands of people. That wasn't the case. We were largely staying in the homes of pastors, and that's where we made some of our best friends to this day. It was a great time in our life. We were staying with a pastor in his home, and he had adopted a girl who went through a lot in her upbringing. I think they adopted her when she was 4 or 5. And she really struggled. And they did their best to love her and to serve her. But when she was about 15, she got pregnant. And back in that day, particularly in this church environment that this pastor was in, it was a very difficult thing for her because the people around her, not the mom and dad, but were more condemning than they were affirming. They were more like, you know, basically you failed us, this 16-year-old girl who they required to be pastoral, having no concept of her upbringing and what she went through. But the reality of it was she has a child. She's feeling, if you will, isolated from Christians. Some of it was real, I'm sure, and a lot of it probably was perceived. Shame is such a liar. But now she's about 20 years old. She has her precious daughter, and her parents are now raising and help raising the granddaughter. And so while we were there in her home, we noticed that when we would talk to her, and she didn't come to the services, she would never look up. Shame had so captured her soul that she couldn't even look at you when you talked to her. And so as Michelle and I just, as we our custom would be, as many of you, you spend time praying, and God dealt with us both independently to help her. Now, you have to understand, we had very little. And the Holy Spirit spoke to both of our hearts to give her everything we had. Now, I have to understand that this is our whole ministry. Everything we have that have come in that was to give to this girl. I think it ended up being $1,500 or $1,400. But it was all we had. And I forget the exact amount, but I lose the amounts. But I know it was somewhere around $1,500, or might have been more. I forget. But here's what I know. It was everything we had. And so I went because I was able to get the cash. And just quietly, when we were in their home, we pulled her aside and just gave her this money. She couldn't almost take it. We said, no. We just want you to know how much you mean to God and how valuable you are. And you and your daughter are so precious. And we just want you to know that you're loved. And God put you on our heart to do this. And I think she probably thought we were rich. That's all we had. And I mean, there was nothing left. Why am I telling you that? Because it had nothing to do with money, but God placing value in her heart from people that she had considered that she had received rejection. Now, here's what I want you to see. Here's a girl that could not look us in the eyes. Now, 20 years go by, and this precious little girl that she's raised is broken, and it's now become generational. And she's such an addict that her life's at risk. We don't live in the same town. We don't live close to where she is. She tracked Michelle and I down 20 years later and asked us, could you help my daughter? She came and brought her daughter to us. And I was able to sit with her daughter and lead her daughter to Christ. But the addiction overwhelmed her in the years, not even years, yeah, years to come. And her life ended very young. Addiction's a horrible taskmaster. But she's in heaven today. And I wonder, that simple act of obedience, valuing every interaction with every individual, seeing it as a once-in-a-lifetime privilege, to seek to see everyone like God sees them, then to infuse your time together with kindness, hospitality, and excellence. Here's what I've learned about the seeds of kindness. They often grow very, very, very slowly. But the other side of it is, but they harvest greatly. And so I just want to encourage you to realize that these are seeds in people's lives. The God we serve sees and extracts the precious out of what others have deemed worthless. And he can only do it through the body of Christ, his people. We all know the story, of course, of David when the prophet came to anoint one of Jesse's sons king. They didn't even consider David because he was just a shepherd boy. And the father didn't even bring him in to be considered. But at the end of the day, when there's an old song that when others see a shepherd boy, God sees a king. I want to encourage you, see the king in people. Consider it a privilege to serve them. Make it count. One of the things through the years I've learned to say to people when I'm involved in helping them, and as a pastor, I think you can imagine for those of you who are in any kind of ministries of care, you face some insanely difficult situations with people, from just difficulties to people that have fallen into sin that has destroyed their life. And I've learned to say something that when I interact with them, because shame is a terrible taskmaster, is that when I begin to interact with them, the first thing I say is, hey, I really look forward to getting together with you and serving you, because it is serving them. And when you see it a privilege to pour into every human being, and when you're asked to be in those environments, that you actually serve the person who feels they're not worthy, you actually begin to bring value. You make it count. Simple question. Who's in your life right now? Right now. Right now that you can help and make it count. It may not be money. It may be a kind word. It may be, I don't know what it is for you, but make it count. You see, one of the main things we're all called to do as believers is to make it count for people who are without Jesus. Gerald Brooks, who I would consider to be certainly one of my mentors, has a statement that he's made over and over again to ministers and to pastors and those in any authority in the local church. And I'm going to paraphrase it, but here's what he said. People without Jesus or the lost are never in a planning meeting or a budget meeting. As the leader or the pastor, it is your job to represent them. So easy in the world that we live to forget about the people Jesus died for, particularly in the world in which we live. I do want to let you know, for those of you that have any responsibility in the local church, particularly lead pastors, on Monday, August 22nd, Gerald is going to be at Cranberry doing what he calls breaking the 500 barrier. And he's going to help pastors to see the skills and the tools necessary to reach people beyond where you are today. And honestly, he's really going to be dealing with the actual necessity of being a pastor today and developing the pastoral gift. I've seen the content. He's talked to me about it. It will be life-changing. It's $100 per person. This isn't ours. We're hosting it. And you can sign up on Gerald's website. The link is in our show notes. If you're a senior pastor or you have people on your team that you want to understand how to pastor in the post-COVID area, which is what he is going to be talking about, I would encourage you to avail yourself to that Monday, August 22nd. But Gerald actually kept infusing to me, John, lost people don't show up in people's minds. They have to be on the forefront of your heart. And so here's a question about making it count with lost people. And the first value, and I can't go back, but I shared about how I did something so incredibly shameful. The man who ultimately became my pastor, I just offloaded on him when my mother threw me into a meeting in an environment with him at a church picnic. And to get him off my back, not so much him, but her, and she'll never do it again, I told him the vilest things I was doing, thinking that he would immediately reject me because that was my presumption, that that's what Christians do. But when he looked at me and never changed his expression and simply said, John, you just have no idea how much God loves you. I rehearsed that on our first value, but I think when I looked, the words I would have used then that I wouldn't use today was that interaction haunted me. The goodness of God is what leads men to repentance. That man, because of the love of God in him, he spoke maybe 20 words, and it changed my life. He made it count. But here's the question I want to ask. I wonder what would have happened that day had I met me or you at that church picnic instead of Bill. We've got to ask ourselves very hard questions when it comes to making it count for those without Jesus. What if you met yourself at your church today or at your job? Would you have any hope of knowing God? Would you have any hope of seeing the light of the gospel through the actual lifestyle of a person and the actions and the behavior and the care of a person? If you're a pastor, Go back over this past weekend's service. If you had come to that service far from God or lost, would it have been an environment where it would have been easy for you to give your life to Jesus? I really do want to encourage you. Make it count this week for someone in your sphere of influence that's without Christ or that's far from God. The third point on the value of make it count is this. Make it count in every interaction. In every interaction. This is very intentional. And when it's a value, it will come naturally to you. I learned this lesson early on when I began to listen to John Maxwell. I was maybe pastoring a couple years in, 3 years in. And I discovered the resources of John Maxwell. It changed him. Man, it was life-changing to me. And John sold a 100-tape series, 100 tapes. Yeah, they were tapes back then. If you're too young to know what a tape is, Google it. And I bought them. They were terribly expensive for where we were, but it was the best investment of my life. And on the tapes, he shared a story. John shared a story about Dan Ryland, who worked for him at the church he was pastoring prior to this. And Dan was brought on staff, and Dan has kind of been the prototype for the executive pastor role. Dan Ryland is a remarkable man. And John said, Dan, and I'm going to mess the story up a bit, but Dan came on staff, and John was, during the work week, out talking to people, and Dan was walking through. He just came on staff, and he whizzed right by everybody on his way to a meeting with his head down. Later that afternoon, John brought him in and said, hey, Dan, why'd you do that this morning? And he said, John, what do you mean? He said, why did you do that in the hallway? He goes, what did I do? He said, you walked by everybody. He said, well, John, I would have been late. I would have been late for a meeting. He said, Dan, the reason you're here is not the meeting. The reason you're here is to interact and care for these people. He said, don't ever, ever walk through this building again with your head down. Walk through the building slowly. Give yourself enough time to be able to interact with people and not just do it superficially, but let them know you are engaged. If it only can be for 90 seconds, then you make those 90 seconds count and make sure it's real, because we are here for people, Dan. That is the reason you're here, not the meeting. And so you build that into your schedule. And basically, he was saying, make it count for people. The reality of it is that people need God with skin. Every human being is designed for relationships. All people, and I mean all people, are designed by God both to give and to receive care. Now, for sometimes when leaders hear that, you might say, well, you know what? I'm not that much built for relationships. I can give care, but you know, honestly, you know, I just don't need what other people need. Can I tell you that if that's what you think, you are setting yourself up for a crash. You are not a superhuman. If you are isolated, if you are absent relationships, it's because you believe a lie about them, and that isolation is going to harm you, because all of us are designed to receive care, not just from God. The concept that all I need is Jesus is not true. Now, if you're talking about eternity, yes, but if you're talking about being made whole, to live your life fully, you need people, not just to serve and to give to, but to receive from. Everybody needs God with skin because we've been designed that way. So learn to make every interaction count. Learn to do what John Maxwell told Dan Ryland. Walk through the building slowly. Look at every interaction as a way to bring value to people. If you don't do this, if you don't build relationships, if you don't pour your life into people and seeing them equally valuable, regardless of what they can or can't do for you, you are going to be stunted in your spiritual growth and stunted in your life regarding the relationships that do matter to you. This is so important. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be married to someone who helped me build this value in my life. The last point about make it count is this. Relational kindness and hospitality and excellence convey both trust and worth. Let me say that again. Relational, not superficial, relational kindness and hospitality and excellence convey both trust and worth to people. It conveys trust to people that perhaps are economically well off or economically doing well. when they come into your environment. For example, kindness and hospitality is one thing, but a spirit of excellence is very important for people that have built a successful life. They don't want to come into an environment that is for God, that is less than where they work. And when you intentionally, and this is the word, I didn't say perfectionism. I didn't say spend money you don't have. Excellence is different than perfectionism. Remember this. Excellence is what you do for others. Perfectionism is what you do for you. Here's what I've learned about perfectionism. It's a fear-born illness. The perfectionist needs things to be a certain way for them, and they become very unrealistic. The perfectionist is the person that puts their spices in alphabetical order, and if they get moved, they break down. People that get upset if something gets moved or someone put the fork in the wrong way, that's an illness. You can get help for this. But we usually put virtue to perfectionism. There's nothing virtuous about fear. Perfectionism is a fear-born illness. Excellence is what you do for others. Perfectionism isn't what you do for others, but what you will ultimately demand that others do for you. So kindness, hospitality, and mainly excellence will convey trust to those who are in a place to where maybe they have middle-class economic resources or above. But can I tell you that it also conveys worth to those who are struggling in life? Kindness, hospitality, and excellence convey not just trust, but worth. The economically successful person will trust you because you're living at a standard and you're creating a standard for God that's at least at the level where they work. Because in their mind, whether they know it or not, is that if they don't see excellence in the place that says it's for God, they're not going to trust the leader. Well, that's not right. It doesn't matter what's right. This is about people, not about my expectations. So remember, this value of making it count isn't just for the down and out, but the up and out. And we've been in all those circles in our lives, down and out and up and out, in all varieties and areas. But let me talk to you just for a minute as I wind this down on how relational, that's the key word, not superficial, relational, kindness, hospitality, and excellence conveys trust and worth. Now let me talk to you about how it conveys worth to those who are struggling. I've seen this happen more times than I can remember in our church. Now, our Cranberry campus has a level of excellence that is required for Cranberry. Our Newcastle campus will have excellence, but it will fit that region. Our Meadville campus will fit that region. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Excellence is what the people in that region will value. So we're not talking about perfection, and we're not talking about throwing away money. More times than I can remember through the years, I've watched people walk into our building, and I've watched them try to, when they inadvertently walk past me after a service, because I always stand to greet people outside where our fountain is, and they notice that they're walking by me before they know they're there, and I watch this uncomfortable look on their face as I watch a mom, and this is not stereotypical, it's happened more times than I can remember, have her two or three kids with her, and you know just by looking at her, she's alone. She kind of puts her head down, gathers her kids close to her so they don't mess anything up, and goes on her way. What I've learned to do, no matter who I'm speaking to, is to stop, and I get her attention. And the look in the person's eyes every time almost makes me weep. Like, oh, I'm so, like they were almost apologizing for being there. Now, I'm married to someone who felt that way once her father abandoned her. And it's such a lie. Time and time again, I want to help you to see what you can do, what you can train the people around you to do. People at every table, serving people after a service, at any way. Is I'll stop and I'll interrupt whatever I'm doing and I'll go to that mom and I'll stop and I'll say, please, what's your name? And they barely look up often. And they'll tell me and I said, where are you from? And I'll engage them. And I'll stop and I'll say, I want you to understand something. Everything in this building was built for you. Your little ones that are with you today, I want you to know everything in this building is for them. Because I've watched people again and again grab their kids to keep them away from things because they're afraid that they're gonna mess something up. And I look at those kids and you could see they're trained that way. And I'll say to them, I'm so glad you're here. We are here for you. And I'll say, Mom, I said, are they allowed to have candy? Does anyone have allergies? And 99% of the time it's no. And then I become grandpa and I'm going to give them food that they won't sleep for a month. I actually have it stashed and I'll load them up. Now say, well, how do I do that as a church? I want someone at a table to see that in someone's eyes. And I don't care why they're at the table, what they're there to represent or what they're there to tell people about or to receive. But when they see that person, when they see the look in their eyes, I want them to act. I want them to see those children. This may be the only time in their life that somebody verbally and physically gives them value. And it's amazing what that can do if it's real. And time again, take them over to our bookstore, get them something. You say, well, you're just giving people stuff. No, I'm giving people value. It makes a difference. Make it count for people. Make it count. Make it count. Let me close our time with telling you a story that when I was 8 years old. I grew up with four brothers, and we didn't have a lot of money. My dad worked in a steel mill. So back in those days when you would go to, back then it was Kmart, you could leave your kids outside because nobody wanted them. Nobody stole kids mainly a lot back then because particularly five boys, in that time there were just four of us old enough to be left alone. Nobody wanted four of you. And we were out there, and there would be those little horses that you could ride. You put a quarter in, and it would kind of just bounce up and down. I don't see those much anywhere. But my brothers and I, we didn't have quarters. My dad, with that many kids, we just honestly didn't have the money to give us all, you know, three or four quarters apiece to ride a horse. He was in there chasing the blue light at Kmart. For those of you that remember Kmart, you know what that means. It's the forerunner to Walmart, for those of you who don't know. And I remember sitting on one of those horses, pretending that it's moving, bouncing up and down. And some guy, probably two guys, are walking in. They couldn't have been looking back more than 25. And the one guy, just as he walked by, dropped a quarter in that little slot. And the horse started going. And I can't tell you the joy that I felt. Oh my gosh. And then my older brothers drug me off so they could ride it. But I was 8 years old. I'm 61. I remember that today as vividly as any memory in my life. Why? Because what was a quarter to that man just was something so unexpected to me. And so, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy just did this. A quarter to me was like $1,000. I was like, oh my gosh. Here's what I want to encourage you as we wind down. Why don't you be the story someone tells 20 or 30 years from now? It doesn't have to be spiritual. Why don't you be the story a single mom tells or a person going through difficulty? Be the story somebody tells. Make it count. I look forward to being with you next month as we continue through the values. God bless you.
Thanks again for tuning in to the John Nuzzo Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to rate, review, and share this podcast on iTunes. It's a great way to get the word out and to help others grow as leaders. We'll see you back here next time for another episode of the John Nuzzo Leadership Podcast.